You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. On this episode, our guest is Ken Lansing. Ken, it's good to have you here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So this is part of a process of interviewing three candidates for the sheriff's, the county sheriff's office, and you are the county sheriff, Tompkins County Sheriff, and you're running for re-election. We're going to talk more about that later in the show. The first few questions are going to be my standard show questions, and then we'll talk more about your candidacy for re-election. So, who are you? What do we need to know about this, about your life, what you aspire to live, what you've done? What do we know to start this? Need to know to start this conversation? And even though you're a public figure, you know, this is about your personhood.
Well, I'm a pretty simple person, country fella. I was brought up in the Columbia County area, which is eastern New York. The Berkshire Mountains were in my parents' backyard, and the Catskill Mountains in the front yard. We were 8 miles from the Massachusetts border, and went to a school called Ockawamic, which is an Indian chief's name. So very simple. My grandparents had a chicken farm. My uncle, who I'm named after, had a large horse farm, and we had a friend that had a dairy farm. So I guess I'm kind of a farm boy.
And from that eastern edge of New York, which was a different kind of environment than the western side of New York in terms of how it developed historically and culturally.
Yes, most definitely. Yes.
So what brought you to this region?
Well, I decided to go to college in western New York. So mm-hmm. I went to the Batavia area where Genesee Community College was, and went there and took up a 2-year degree and started in police science and just changed it over to general science at that point in time. I graduated from there and came to Cortland, New York, to be a security officer for the State University of Cortland in 1973.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a bit of a background sketch. And what are some of the qualities or values that have kind of guide your life or shape your life?
Well, one of the things that, you know, how I was brought up, my father was a huge influence in my life, and he always reminded me, you always want to treat people the way you expect to be treated and want to be treated. And, you know, that's a very simple principle. And if you practice it, it even becomes more simple. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I always have tried to live by and practice in my life. I love everybody, and I try to give people help. And I guess that's how I got in law enforcement. Even in a young age, I always mm-hmm. enjoyed helping people.
And you also brought some music with you, and we customarily cut into music early in the show. Just so, what would you like to open with the pieces that you sent?
Well, Born Free would probably be the one I'd like to open up with.
Okay, and do you want
Kid Rock?
Okay, and you want to say anything about it before we play it, or
no? The music choices that I picked today are ones that I listened to as a teenager and a college student, and right. They just mean a lot to me in various different ways.
Okay, here we go.
Like a river raging strong.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Ken Lansing. So, Ken, given the life you live now and what you value now, what were some of the experience? What did you have to learn to know how to live the way you value living now? What did you have to go through?
Well, you know, I guess one thing, when you try to live the life that I've tried to live, you learn, no matter how hard you try, you're not going to make everybody happy or appreciate or even condone what you do, especially in our business and law enforcement.
Right.
So, you know, that's a hard thing because you really want to strive to do what's best for everybody. At least I do. And it was a hard thing. Disappointment was there sometimes that you just couldn't touch or reach that person and get the point across to them, whatever it might've been.
Right. So you have to live with conflict.
Right.
How did it finally, that was probably more my issue, but how did it come through to you that this is the way it is? What did you go through that made it just clear to you that this is to be who you are? You're just going to have to carry on.
Yeah. I guess after it happened enough to you, you realize and came up with the old thing that you've heard so many times, you can't please everybody.
Right.
You know, so with that, but nonetheless, for me, even at my age now, and as long as I've been in this business, 45 years, to me, it's still disappointing because, you know, I really, really like to help people. I really like to, have conversation and listen to what they, you know, are concerned about or whatever, and then try to help in some way. So it still is difficult, but I've come to the fact that I just remind myself, okay, you did your best. You heard what they had to say. You said what you had to say. And, it's going to probably have to end the way it did with a little bit of disagreement or a lot of disagreement.
Right, and exactly. I think, you know, we're in kind of a funny space, or maybe it's because of my particular rural background, but a lot. What I noticed when I came east, or even in some small towns in the Midwest, was that if you can't please everybody, kind of was used as a statement. Well, you know, if they really understood, they'd agree, and we're right and they're wrong, or they're right and we're wrong. You know, that's the battleground that it gets out. But when I grew up as a kid and I heard people say that, it's like, you know, we all need a space to be, and we're not going to agree. And no one of us is going to be able to lord it over the other. And that's a different attitude about difference than a lot of this posturing to kind of put down the other side. What I'm trying to get at is how you live this fact that you can't please people. It's a hard thing to do, but how do you hold the people that you can't please? How do you hold them in your mind and in your heart?
Well, it hurts a little, okay, because you do want to, but I hold them in my mind. They're an individual. We're all individuals, and we all have differences, and that's what makes the world be what it is today. So you just come to that conclusion that, all right, I hope and I think I did my best to get a point across,
sure.
And I understand. And, you know, and sometimes you do take a step back and say, you know what? Maybe I'm not as right as I thought I was about that. And they did bring some points to my, you know, I'm always open to listen when people want to discuss things that maybe, you know, I have a different opinion about. I'm always open for that. And I have had my mind changed by people after I listened to their side.
So you're holding on to not pleasing them, but you're not ignoring them. And a lot of times that stance of, you know, I can't please all the people is an excuse to ignore them. And that gets us into trouble.
Yeah. And I've never done that.
Yeah,
would I do that, ignore somebody, because, you know, you always have to be open for change yourself or opinions and listen to them and really take a close look. I can tell you sometimes you'll take a position and you'll listen to people and step back and say, you know what? I didn't think of it the way they just explained it to me, and I need to look at it that way.
So when in your life, and I'm going to use some kind of Christian language. When in this life did your enemy teach you what you needed to learn?
My enemies?
When the people you that disagreed with you, when did you realize they may have something to teach you that you may need to reassess and restart? How old were you when you began to realize that? Or what was the setting in which you began to realize that? And enemies can be even your spouse on a certain issue where you just so fundamentally disagree. I mean, it's a...
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to think, you know, I'm sure it was probably pretty young because I got in this business at 20. So,
some people have kind of a pretty just this is how it is view, and they don't let others in.
Yeah, but I do, and always have, you know, and that can obviously, you know, be a double edged sword. I mean, you're going to get hurt sometimes when you do that. That's for sure, and you have to understand that that could happen when you do take people in and start to. Have this conversation or whatever with them. So, but I'm sure that, I learned it at a young age because I did get in this business at 20, and I'm sure I had moments in this business early on that, did it. I mean, I know one time just a simple thing like a traffic stop that I had at a very young age, and I'm new to the world of law enforcement, and stopped a person, and the person that owned the car wasn't driving it. The friend was. It was a minor violation. It was just registration and inspection. So the person, after talking to them, convinced me that they would get behind the wheel. So that it would look, you know, so they can say, I was driving a car, issue those tickets to me. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I did. And that was a huge mistake.
Right.
Because that's not how it works. But I was new to it. I did that. I learned very quickly, do what you're supposed to do and not be convinced by people that maybe you can do it a different way.
Well, you can't change the facts, but you can change your assessment of the facts.
Right.
And it seems like in doing the ticket, you change the facts.
Yes. Yeah. And again, you know, it was a technicality because, yes, once they got behind the wheel, again, they were responsible for the vehicle they're driving. But nonetheless, you know, it was a good friend of theirs. They wanted to take the hit for it. But what they did is they turned around when they came to court and said, well, I really wasn't driving a car. So they turned it against me. And again.
They bamboozled you.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. So. How have you had to change in ways you wouldn't have anticipated or necessarily chosen? And that's one question. Some people prefer the question, how has life surprised you and turned out really differently than you expected? There are two different ways of getting at
change. Yeah, early in life, things weren't as complex as they've become later in life because times have changed, obviously.
But you've also changed, and your roles have changed.
Right.
So how has that complexity forced you to learn or be different than you were when you thought it was simpler?
Well, what it is for me, you're always taught to be upfront, honest, and tell it like it is. At least that's how I was brought up. Mm-hmm. When you watch other people not do that, and change really the true meaning of what they're trying to get across for a reason, they're changing the true meaning by leaving things out and not being forthwith completely or just partially or even sometimes downright not telling the truth. For me, that was very hard because of my principles and how I was brought up. But you learn that is a part of the world, like it or not, and you're going to have to deal with it should it come up in your life and affect you in some way or people that you care about.
Right, right. And I still hear in that the sting of dealing with a misportrayal. Or an untruth, mm-hmm. I know those feelings. I also know that many times what comes to me as an untruth is a perspective that I am blind to. So it can be both at the same time. And what you were talking about before about how you handle difference, it's hard sometimes to perceive whether we're being hoodwinked, or manipulated, or whether people are seeing stuff that we just haven't yet seen. And what you've described now is the emotional feeling, right, of it. And before, what you described was more the kind of practical, how do we all exist together,
right,
issue.
Yeah. It's probably one of the things that strikes me and hurts me the most when that happens. I have a hard time dealing with it, and I sometimes let my emotions, mm-hmm, take over how I respond to, mm-hmm, it. And I don't like it after I've done that. All right. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes, because of how you came across.
And sometimes the emotional response is the honest truth.
And it is.
In all of its fireworks or all of its hurt.
Right.
It's the honest truth.
It is. But, you know, sometimes when you've got that situation, you need to obviously sometimes temperament it, or, you know, and stuff like that. And because sometimes I get so emotional, and a lot of times it's not so much about me, but maybe what's going on is also going to hurt other people that really have no involvement in what's going on and what people are trying to get by saying or doing what they do.
Right.
And that really bothers me.
Right. And I guess... this is the standard kind of, whether you're a citizen bystander or whether you're a law enforcement officer, how do you take responsibility for trying to protect others, and how do you stand back and leave them the space to figure out how to deal with themselves?
Well, you hope that at the time of this is going on, that your judgment and everything won't be clouded in any way, and that you can obviously say, whoa, wait a minute, change this direction right now. Don't continue on the course you're going, because it's going to crash and burn.
But how you say that, and whether they can hear you say that, or how you physically are present, is going to impact. And sometimes staying out and just trusting that they can figure it out, but just keeping them in eye distance, but not engagement. How do you make that kind of call?
Well, it's a judgment call, obviously, and you maybe hopefully are able to pull back on similar experiences or incidents or whatever that you've had in the past and draw on that. And sometimes for me, it's coming right to the point very quickly. This is the way it is, and you and I have to deal with this right now.
Right.
Spell it out immediately. Don't beat around the bush type thing, is what we say.
Right, right. And the way you just framed it, this is the way it is, says that we have to, this is what we have to deal with. Now, they may have a different take on this is the way it is, and that's where you have to deal with the difference piece.
Right.
But what you're not saying is this is the law and you better comply.
No.
And that is a huge difference, but it's hard because we're going to disagree about the way it is.
Yes. And right. And people do, but for me, that challenge, is one that I've taken on in my life over many times in life. And I think at the end, when you usually get done with whatever it is you're doing, that respect can still be there between the two parties or whatever of how it went down, because you were, to the point and that, even though we may disagree or have a different perspective when it's all
said and done. Or maybe empowered to act in different ways.
Right.
And have... let's cut to music. What should we play? What should we play next from your list?
Yeah. Okay. How about Eric Clapton and In the Air Tonight with Phil Collins?
Okay.
I like that one.
Here we go.
Yeah. I can feel it in the air tonight, oh Lord.
that grin, 'cause I know where you've been, sobbing a pack of lies. And I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh Lord, I've been waiting for this moment from my life. Oh Lord, the hurt doesn't show, but the pain still grows. So stranger to you and me.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Ken Lansing. So Ken, let's turn to the election. Why did you choose to run for re-election?
When we started to accomplish so many great things this last 4 years, and heading into a great direction when it comes to the jail population, the men and women on the roadside also accomplishing a lot of great things as far as what we're doing, as far as crime and stuff in the county. It was very rewarding to me, and I've been doing this, as I said, for a long time. And then when I had people come to me and say, would you consider running one more time, even though we know you said that you weren't going to, that's very humbling, you know? And I said, why not? I mean, I obviously went home and spoke to the wife first, but, you know, because it affects the family, and it affects all the family.
And what are those effects? What did you have to consider?
Well, you have to consider politics, okay? And I don't know that I need to say any more than that. We get plenty of that from the federal right on down to the local.
And but how does that impact your family?
Big time. It really does. I mean, they worry about me. They worry about my health. You know, I had a heart attack in 07, a month before I retired from the village of Cayuga Heights. Eye-opener. You sometimes think you're doing the right things, but obviously I wasn't. It's not something that runs in the family. My dad's 93 years old, still alive, got everything upstairs still going very well. He's just very old and very frail, and the rest of his body's starting to say, you know what, we're not sure how much longer you're going to be here. In fact, he was in hospice for a while, but they kicked him out. And that was quite interesting that they kicked him out.
It's not an uncommon story.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so, you know, I love the job. When I retired from Cayuga Heights, I went immediately to Schuyler and helped them part-time over there, okay, under DSS, the security, as a deputy. You know, it's a big part of my life. And the men and women work so hard, and if you they want you to come back and so that they can continue under your direction, that's great.
Right.
You know, it really is. So it wasn't real hard after they talked to it. But now that, you know, the election's here and things go on, then you start to realize that, you know, it does hurt the family, and they do worry about your health, and they do worry about your you know, everyday life, because they know how busy you are.
Right. And their worries are understandable. What are their hopes for you? Their worries are understandable, but what are their hopes for you? Why? I mean, they're not. It's just not a no that they wield. They wield a yes too.
Yeah. No, and all, their hopes for me is first to accomplish, you know, what I'm setting out to do, and that's to be reelected. That's what they want to see, and they know that means a lot to me, and they know the reasons why, because they know me very well. But also their hopes for me is, you know, let's get on with the retirement life and enjoy your family and your grandkids and stuff, Dad. And, you know, they know I have plans after being in law enforcement that I'll enjoy and moving into a more country setting in another state and doing things that I love to do, the outdoors and, you know, a little farming, but not farming for like...
vanity farming.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You got it, you know. So... that's their hopes for me, and they just want me to get out of this, you know, still in good health and see me be happy.
So, in addition to the requests from others that you run again and their hopes for you to be able to do what you need to do, why are you doing this now?
Because, you know, I see the great strides that we have started, and I'd like to see them finished. No person likes to leave a job or a task unfinished. And, you know,
what do you see as what are the goods, the unfinished goods that you would like to see more stabilized or finished?
Well, right now we're dealing with the corrections facility. The numbers are down. We have great programs in there now. We want to make sure that we can continue those and add more. Okay. And with that, there comes a lot of decision-making that have to be made by us and the legislators in the county about, okay, how do we accomplish these goals? You know, there's various things out there, new buildings, which is a huge no-no. That's a very expensive thing.
Sure.
We're not looking for more jail space because our goal is to have less people, you know, in our correction facility. You can't continue to put people in jail. That is not the answer. Okay. The answer is we've got to grab these people either before they start becoming career criminals, or we got to grab them once they get into our facility and give them the skills and the needs they have to have when they leave our facility in hopes that they don't come back. Mm-hmm. And that is a big challenge today, not only just because of finding employment and housing for them, but the addiction, the opioid addiction is really, really bad. And we all know that. And that makes this whole picture a very difficult thing to accomplish. So right. You're trying to do both. You're helping in the corrections facility, but you're also helping in the road to educate and combat these issues.
Well, and what is the education, or what is the you can do? And historically, the career of the quote career of a criminal, I understood, was like 15 to 40. And that was the window of time when most of those actions would be taken in terms of violent crime or theft.
Right.
With addiction, I imagine the window gets much longer.
It does.
But what is meant by education, and who needs to be educated?
Well, sometimes, obviously, parents need to be educated and to be aware, have awareness of their children and what they're doing and what they might be leading down the road to be in a world of drugs or crime or both. Obviously, they go hand in hand, unfortunately. So education of parents, helping them out when they come to us, especially with, gee, this happened. What do you think is going on? Because I just can't understand why my son or daughter is doing this or whatever. So we actually, you know, obviously sit down with these people and listen to what they got to say, address the issue, whatever it might be, and give them the educational tools and parts of it, and also sometimes obviously the help through law enforcement. The educational part obviously takes place obviously in schools and the DARE program, which has been around forever, and it's not a fix-all, and it's taken a lot of hits for that, and we never claimed as DARE officers, which I was one for 17 years. But the relationship that we made with the kids, not just teaching them life skills about drugs and bullying and stuff like
it
that.
It doesn't help them necessarily stop their behavior,
no.
But it does create a possibility of relationship.
And it does. And I could sit here for the rest of the day and tell you hundreds of stories how I became personally involved with a lot of these students. And now they're adults, obviously, in this world. And still, they'll reach out to me to
right.
this day.
Right. And to do the education piece, you have to assume that people are willing to listen.
Definitely.
And what kinds of contact, what kinds of changes need to happen, or what, for you and for parents and for others to be heard, what is the context in which that needs to happen? Is it happening now, or is what needs to change, if that's one of your...
It has and it is happening now. But number one, your audience has to have trust. Trust in you as a person that comes to them, and that your knowledge is vast enough to give them the tools they need to get the education they need to prevent certain things from happening. And then the other thing, the desire. You know, it's just like addiction. When people are addicted, you really got to get them to realize that they're addicted and they've got a problem, and admit they've got a problem and want help.
It has to be a problem for them rather than a way of life.
Or issue, yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So just back to the trust issue. Trust isn't blind, but trust is a bet that we are better off trying to work together than not. If I approach you with suspicion or with, and even legitimate suspicion, but if I approach you with disdain or distrust, we won't figure out what's possible. But if I approach you with openness and a little self-protectiveness, there's a chance. So I'm framing this in the context of, this is something you want to address before you leave, if you are reelected for 4 years. What would it look like if you were to achieve that goal of education? What would it look like in terms of the behaviors of residents of the county?
Well, would obviously, and I hear this now, people will come up to me. The other day I was at a function and somebody couldn't help but tell me how they had a great experience with one of our deputies and helping them and their daughter in a situation. So how it would look is that, obviously would start to see statistics in certain areas start to hopefully come to be lesser or more stable, depending on what each of those statistics we're dealing with. And the trust thing is something that, you start to see because you're getting people to contact your department and ask for help and want to be a part of whatever it is that you might be offering. Like, we have a lot of people that have been very interested, and we've done a great job in this county to the hard work of the men and women with the active shooter program, right. And things like that. So they reach out to you and start asking for certain things that we are providing.
But I think one of the best indicators of trust is when people can come to you with a complaint and say, I'm not crucifying you with this complaint, but we got to deal with this. And that shows a level of trust, because then there's skin in the game on both sides.
Right.
And when there's not skin in the game, it doesn't go anywhere.
Exactly. And we see that. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what it is, and I'm surely not tooting my horn because I don't do that. But a good friend of mine who went high up in the ranks in the New York State Police, he's younger than I. But anyway, he one time said to me, and we are best of friends, he says, I don't know what it is, but you just have a way with people. He says, I watch you, and I have watched you since I was a kid, and you just seem to have that way with people where they come to you and just dump it in your lap and say, hey, I need some help, or, I can trust you. They actually even say that. Can you steer me in the right direction or help me or my family? It's a thing that a lot of us might be lucky enough to have that skill, and if we don't, we got to learn how to develop it.
Right. So, I have two questions for candidates, and they can pick. They can pick which one they answer, and so I'll give them both. And this is just a way for you to choose how to frame yourself before we go into the last segment of the show, which is about self-care. So the first option is: when did your thriving require that you ask for critical help? Why were you in such a state of need? What did you learn about yourself and others when you were critically dependent? How has this shaped your serving others? I realize there are four questions in there, but it's one nutshell. The second option is another nutshell. When have you advocated for and won a decision that later proved terribly misguided or wrong? How did you acknowledge the mistake? How did you address and restore relationships with those who were harmed by the decision? Which of those two would you want to take?
Very good questions, and take a lot of thought. I guess the second one, and how I've addressed it, I even have a few notes here.
Sure, sure.
You know, how I addressed it is really in a broad sense.
What was the decision? What happened?
Well, I can't label one particular incident.
Okay, sure.
And that's the thing about. But I felt that last question is one that it's not to say that I don't make mistakes. I surely do and have. Okay. But this question prompts something deeper for me.
Right.
All right. And that's, I like to be very well informed when it comes to programs, ideas, and stuff to be presented.
Sure.
I always say I do my homework before. Mm-hmm. I just don't shoot from the hip. I try to get all advice from those who know more or what are better adapted to do whatever it is I'm looking to accomplish. But I will say one thing, that I advocate, and to a fault, for people. And be it, in the hiring practices as an administrator, or be it in what we just discussed, wanting to be there for people that need help, sitting down with them, trying to iron out, give advice, whatever you want to call it, to help them with their issues or problems. And you do that with the best interests of them and trying to help, but not always do the results come out as we would wish. Mm-hmm. And again, that's in the broad sense. I mean, I know it doesn't narrow something down, but unfortunately, you can't control people's decisions. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to disappointment after you've tried to help them in whatever the incident was. You know, I've taken upon myself... I've actually, given people that I've met in the jail situation, okay, in corrections, we have trustees in there, and those people are allowed to work in the kitchen, be somewhat, free during the day to help us out in the garden, whatever. And, when I get a chance and to go over and talk to these people, and they then trust me or whatever, I've given them my phone number, okay, for when they leave the facility, to be another part of their network should they need it. And I've had them call me, and I've had them ask me to help them or give advice or whatever, and you do that.
Right. I guess though what I'm trying to get at, that's how you formed a relationship with somebody who's made a decision that's resulted in their incarceration or in jail time. But how have you addressed people where you've made a decision that you realized that was just not good? It did not work out, and you had to do something to change. What happened? How did you handle the aftermath?
Well, first of all, no matter what that is, you have to admit you made a mistake. You have to show them that, look, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat this. I'm not going to try to say, oh, well, or anything like that. All right. I made this decision. I did this. And guess what? I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm trying to discover why I was wrong, so I don't make that same mistake again. Okay. But I was wrong. That to me, for anybody, should open the door of starting to understand as we start to discuss what it is we did wrong and what we think we should or could do better to correct not doing something like this again.
Right. Right. And that helps to kind of create an air of openness and transparency and honesty. And after the admission of that I did something wrong, what's the next step?
Well, for me, when you're addressing that with whoever it might be it single people or even a group, you ask them, how do you see it? How would you suggest that I might, do better, or ideas from you that I don't make the same mistake? What do I need to do? And, I've had people, say, well, like in the hiring process, have you done this, this, and this to try to get diversity or whatever? Well, geez, I never thought of that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And you admit that and say, no, I need to. Okay. I like that idea. And I thank you for that. I mean, things like that.
But I'm wondering if from the recognition of the mistake, to the beginning to address how it could be different if there's another step that's not in there. And it's one that's gotten a lot of, well, it hasn't gotten a lot of press, it's a little bit. But, you know, how do you restore, what do you do that restores a possible relationship when it's been damaged by a mistake that you've made?
Well, not being afraid to say you're sorry, that's for sure, okay? And explain why you're sorry, because you care, and you realize that, wow, that was a decision I made that I wish I could take back, but I can't. So how do you and I, you know, start to mend the fences or whatever that are broken because of what happened? And you know, openness and sincerity. You know, you have to be sincere. You can't be, you know, making the...
And the sincere apology, it shows contrition, but it also allows the person who has been aggrieved or the people to realize that they're not in some way at fault here, or if they are, it's not the primary issue was another place, and they can be free of the grief and the doubt and the pain. Because the apology allows everybody to start over.
Most definitely.
If it's a good and direct, honest one.
Most definitely. I mean, for me, I don't have a problem with being sincere because that's how I was brought up, and I am sincere. When I say something, I mean it. You know, it is sincere because I give a damn about people and trying to do what's right for people and by people.
But we live in a culture where the ability to apologize is either seen as a sign of weakness or as a sign of we're just trying to pull one over others. And those two things undermine the ability of the apology to actually restore a relationship. Yeah.
And it can, you know, and you're right. Yeah. But, you know, there's been times that I've admitted, you know, that I was wrong or made a mistake or whatever. And I tell them right up front, I'm not trying to BS you. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean what I'm saying to you right now. So I hope you understand that.
And it shows in the work that, I mean, when it's meant, it will show in the work that's done afterwards.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Let's cut to music. What should we play next?
How about Heart of Gold by Neil Young.
Here we go.
Searching for a heart of gold. keep me searching for a heart of gold. You keep me searching and I'm growing old. Keep me searching for a heart of gold. I've been a miner for a heart of gold.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Ken Lansing. So, Ken, as we kind of come in towards the end of the show, the way I like to close the show out is with the question, what do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, physically, intellectually, throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, and how do you know you need to do it?
Well, what I try to do to keep that balance in life is obviously try to find time to at least call or spend time with your family. You need to keep in touch with them no matter how far or close they are. And that's a difficult thing to do sometimes in our business. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have some people that are already in my business that are here, and that's one thing. But the ones that don't live here, you know, it's that phone call that on today's modern technology, the texting and stuff like that, or the vibing or whatever, you know. Yeah. But it's important, you know. And then the physical fitness type thing. I mean, you know, you're not getting any younger. And I, like I said earlier, I did have a heart attack in 07. And I'm proud to say that, you know, I've kept my weight off since then. I lost 25 pounds and it's still gone. And it's not back after 11 years. And, being conscious of, you know, good health as much as you can be. And then doing things that you enjoy to do. If it's just take a quick motorcycle ride someplace, you know, it doesn't have to be a long trip. But you know what? I really enjoy doing things for benefits. This past weekend, we did a motorcycle ride, and I lead it every year, and it's for Cops, Kids, and Toys. Mm-hmm. You know, those things for me are rewarding because you get to see, hey, you know, this is a good thing. This is what you're doing and you're helping out. And that stuff, it means a lot to me. And then we've got a pond behind our house, and there's some days you just want to go up there and sit in a chair and relax and think about, you know, things that you need to think about. And then also how lucky you are in this world today.
Yeah. So when you're, When in your life did you learn that one of your major jobs is to take care of yourself and not be taken care of by somebody else? How did you learn that?
I don't know that I've learned that completely.
Well,
How did I learn that? Yes.
Yeah. So, yes. I mean, some people know it by the time they are 10 years old.
Yeah.
Some people don't learn it until they're 60, 70, 80 years
old.
Yeah,
and I'm in that 60. But, you know, you learn it, and I learned it, you know, at a relatively young age. There's certain things that I enjoy doing with the family and stuff and have for, you know, a dozen plus years. And so I make sure that you always continue to keep that that kind of thing into the family life. So I learned that, you know, at least 20 years ago, okay, there's more to life than the job.
So when your kids were teens.
Exactly. You know, you had to make time with a crazy schedule that law enforcement has, but I did. And, you know, and today I can take a step back and say, I made those important things that my kids were doing at least 95%+ of the time. And that was difficult to do because of scheduling and things like that. But one thing that really sent a clear message to me was my daughter, okay? My daughter, she married a man that is in law enforcement, a homicide detective in Washington, D.C., okay? Has two of my grandchildren, all right, boys. And that sent me a message that, okay, Ken, even though you get yourself really tied up with your job, your kids and especially your daughter realize that police work doesn't interfere with being a good father and a good role model. And she married a man that, you know, that does the same thing. Now, the rest of my kids, two of them got in law enforcement and the other one's in the United States Army. They guess they got the thing. Let's help people.
Yeah,
so, you know.
And there's a discipline and a structure that you can work within that's kind of the backdrop of your life in those roles. So I, as you were talking about, you talked a lot about the emotional relationships of family, taking care of your body in terms of the heart attack and your health, your physical health, and riding the, and the fun and the relationships you have through motorcycles. But what do you do exercise wise? What do you do other than watch your diet, or are you just so physically active?
I belong to a gym. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, you make that in your schedule. A lot of right. times it's early in the morning. I get up early and head to work. Sometimes you obviously don't go to work first. You go and work out and get that to get you refreshed and ready to go for work, to be honest with you. Or if my schedule doesn't permit it, because I have a busy schedule, not on like today. So you do it tonight when you get done.
Sure.
You know, yeah. And you stop and do your cardiac and things like that to keep yourself you know, physically fit as much as you can at my age.
Right, right. And what do you do for the renewal of your mind, the way in which you see things and can frame and reframe? How, what do you do for that aspect of your self-care?
Reading, mm-hmm. you know, listening, and again, reading, you know,
what
news
kinds
articles.
Of things do you read?
You know, I'm big in reading articles about enjoying the outdoors.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay, that's what I really, and I enjoy that and I practice that, mm-hmm, okay? Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a hunter, mm-hmm, but at my age, hunting doesn't mean you have to go out and kill something, okay?
Right.
That's not it anymore. I take video.
And you're not using it for food. I mean, I
that's
grew up
right.
hunting because we fed the family with...
Right, exactly. I do more videoing when I'm out in the woods and enjoying the woods. My wife enjoys doing it, so we do it together, okay?
Right.
So this stuff, you know...
So reading about nature is a whole different structure than
yes.
reading the news or reading
exactly.
History, which
exactly.
is preoccupied with human yeah. crises.
Exactly. It's entertaining. It has so many various things that you can get laughter out of it. You can understand where other people's perspective are in the outdoors and what they do. So that's, you know, the outdoors has been a big part of my life. As I said, mm-hmm, I grew up on a farm, you know, with grandparents and stuff like that. And I've always been an outdoor person and still continue to do that.
And this is a place where it's possible to be both urban and rural.
Yes, it is. Here. And it's yeah. fantastic. Yeah. And this is a nice, this place is not unlike where I spoke to, where right. I was brought up.
What have you learned about your self-care that you would hope your kids and grandkids, especially your grandkids, would learn a little sooner than you did?
To not always think that you are doing the right thing. Make sure you're doing the right things for your health and stuff and eating properly.
And who helps you know what the right things are?
Obviously, as much as we all hate to go to the dreaded doctors and things like that, you know.
Some hate to go and some like to go a little too much.
But. Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. But the point is, you know, you seek the necessary treatments and stuff and be involved. You know, as unfortunately today, especially the grandchildren, what do they got? iPads and telephones.
Right.
And you know, and I know one of my sons, he's got three of my grandboys too, and you know, those kids do that stuff, okay, but they also are out on the lake and fishing and they hunt with us and things like that. So those are the things that you want to make sure that your children and grandchildren enjoy life and get away from the electronics and all that, you know, for me anyway, and the educational part too.
Right. Right.
Pay attention, you know.
And the biggest thing that I think our kids miss is a daily regimen of physical activity. And I'm not talking about sports.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about cleaning the space. I'm talking about taking care of an outdoor space where you have to physically move quickly and build your heart rate up and just get used to it.
Right. Yeah.
Because we haven't done a very good job of building physical labor into our lives.
Not at all.
And our muscles and our skeletons bear the damage
yep.
of that.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more, especially, like you say, being a kid that was brought up around the farm.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you baled hay. Okay,
right. You took care of the horses. Physical every right. day.
Every yeah. day, you yeah. did yeah. physical things. I mean, when I got off the school bus, I immediately headed to one of the farms. You know, be it the dairy or chicken farm. You know, to help my grandparents and help friends. So, yeah, that doesn't happen anymore. They head to the TV or not even the TV. The electronics.
But in some families, it does happen more than others. But
it does.
It's a conscious choice.
Exactly.
Of how we live, and we thought it was just how you had to do it.
Right.
Back in the day, but now we have to choose it.
Exactly.
And it's hard. No,
it is.
Pardon my sermon. I didn't mean to cut in with
no, that. No, that's great. I agree with you. Couldn't agree with you more.
Ken, it's good to get to know you a bit. What should we close the show with? What song should we close the show with?
Okay, yeah, let me take that list. I know which one I want. He's got a... How about we close it with Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton?
Okay, and do you want to say anything about that song?
Again, these songs are ones that I grew up with, and each one of them just has a special place in my heart because of the lyrics, and you know, I enjoyed this music, and it sometimes speaks to me, mm-hmm. as some of these songs that I've picked, and that's what I like about all of them. They speak to me.
And you have been around trauma as a law enforcement officer.
That we have.
Yeah. Here we
yes.
go.
Just can't stay here in heaven.